Yo, 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 welcome to another episode of Voices of Newark with your boy, the future councilman of the Central Ward in Newark, New Jersey, Jamar Youngblood. And I'm here with my lovely campaign manager, Naomi Ruth Stevens.
Hey, everyone.
That's all you got for us today?
No, I'm joking.
You was doing all that talking before the thing. Come on.
Hi, Newark. My name is Naomi Ruth Stevens, and I'm here as Jamar's campaign manager, but you know, I'm also entrepreneur, everything else in between. Very grateful to be here. Thank you for having me.
Zion Park, you want to give them another breakdown of Zion Park in case people didn't catch the last episode?
Awesome. Okay, yeah, Zion Park is a project that I started in 2020 as a way to help with land justice rights in the city of Newark. So essentially we rehabilitated a vacant lot in the West Ward and turned it into a functional event space. And we took that same spirit and that same energy to create different events and activations throughout the city of Newark to promote sustainability, social mobility, land justice, environmental justice.
Sis really a legend out here. She put in a lot of work.
I'm just following in your footsteps.
Hey, pound it, pause. So this week's episode, we are talking about a topic that Naomi and I have been chatting about these last couple of weeks, and that is reactionary politics.
Yes.
So let's get into it. Do you want to share your version? What you think reactionary? Do you want to share your version of reactionary politics? Because I'm sure we may have a difference of terminology or definition of what it means. Because when you first brought it to me,
right,
you introduced it through the context of protests.
Yes.
So you want to expound on that?
Yeah, for sure. So I first came in the knowledge of reactionary politics during 2020, during the George Floyd era. So essentially, I've been on the ground doing a lot of revolutionary protesting and action since I was a little girl. The youngest protest I ever participated in, I was three. But then once I came to my own knowledge of just the power of protesting and collective, more or less protesting, but more so community organizing and collective action. Really when I was in college, and I was a part of the Concerned 44, which is at Seton Hall University, where we were protesting to save some of the Africana Studies departments that we had at Seton Hall during that time. And being a part of this space where social justice was what I was it seemed like everyone was so aware of all of the social injustices that were happening. But for some reason, when the George Floyd incident happened, it woke so many people up. I'm not sure if it was because we were in the pandemic, we were in confinement or whatever, or the quarantine. So a lot of the organizers that I was working with, we felt like a lot of the actions, a lot of things that people were doing were reactionary. Meaning we were reacting to an event as if we didn't know that these injustices existed already. So we took the concept reactionary politics to kind of think about what protesting was during that time, where it wasn't really coming to any resolve. It was just, you were just reacting to what had already existed. However, when you're in a community organizing space, you always are teaching proactiveness, meaning the struggle never ends. We're daily in the fight. We're always at the constant reminder of what social injustices exist. And we're doing things each day to fight and combat that, not just when we see another black body being crucified on TV.
See, this is why this show is going to be really good, because Naomi and I are really good. We're really great friends, not good friends. We're really great friends, but we have this ability to be real honest with each other.
Yes.
You ready for this? She introduced this concept of reactionary politics to me. And at first I did think it was this idea that you just reacting to things, but I did some more research.
Okay, I love that for you.
And it was a little alternative definition. I think it's kind of similar, but let me know what you think about this one.
Go ahead.
Reactionary politics means wanting things to go back to the way they used to be instead of changing or moving forward. People with this view believe that old traditions or systems were better and want to bring them back. They often disagree with new ideas that make big changes to society. So this is a politics show, but we're going to try to make it fun just so it could be more relatable to everyone, because we truly believe that everyone should be involved in politics. Right. So the idea of this show is to actually talk about these high-level concepts, but to do it in a more palatable way that everybody can understand.
Yes.
So based on that definition, does that fit in line with what you were thinking?
I mean, I would say yes, and hear me out, right? So by definition, I'm aware that reactionary politics are more aligned with, like, the conservative agenda. Mm-hmm. For instance, some people would say that Donald Trump is a reactionary politician. However, in the context of what I was referring to back in 2020, it was like I said, it's the idea that everything was fine before this one incident. And now we want to protest and we want to get back things back to where they were, as if police brutality has not been something that's been consistent throughout the course of African American Black history, or just our plight as Black individuals. So, I mean, I would say yes in that context, right? Is because people are so so illusioned to the current state.
Illusion, that's a word?
I don't know. Disillusioned is a word, but they live in illusionment. I don't know. Like, you said make it palatable. Like, y'all know what I meant? Like, Master Versace, like.
I'm jelling, my bad.
But it's okay. No, I meant, like, we live in a constant state where we're not aware of the current condition of the African American or the Black person, or however you want to think about the people of the diaspora, whether you consider yourself Pan-African.
I'm FBA.
Are you a foundational Black American?
Yes, sir.
I have conflicting views, but that's okay. Black nationalism versus Black culturalism, like, these are all conversations. It goes back to even the fundamental of, like, W.E.B. Du Bois versus Booker T. Washington, and how are Black people going to carry the weight towards what they were going to do. So some people are more inclined to bootstrap their way up. Others are more like, we should own our power and our knowledge. But all in all, I say that to say, like, there comes a point in time in history where we no longer can do things the same way that we were doing it before. And reactionary politics are always going to call for us to be back in a docile state where we think that everything's okay just because we're not experiencing the murders or the police brutality or the genocide in real time. So there is no going back because things were never okay to begin with. So people that get out there and protest, even though protesting, you know, whatever you think about that as a form of political resistance is okay. But all in all, there needs to be a complete break and transformation in the system in order for us to move forward as a people.
Okay. See, she's smart, y'all. I know I joke with my sis a lot, but this is the reason why she's my campaign manager. You mentioned Trump. And I guess you mentioned him because of MAGA, his idea of making America great again.
Yeah.
That would be considered reactionary politics, right? Where people think that, let's go back to the old ways. We don't need to try all this progressive stuff. Let's go back to the old ways, right? Yeah. Would you say, what are your thoughts on desegregation? Seriously. Because back in the day, Black people did have a better quality of life when they stuck together. Like, we have examples of that where in Tulsa, you have Black Wall Street. You have examples where Black people were thriving when they were desegregated. Is that an idea?
Like, when they were segregated or desegregated?
See, yeah, I'm tweaking. When they were segregated, not desegregated. When they were segregated, life for a lot of Black people were better, because they had their own communities and they worked together and the dollar stayed in their community, which allowed them to invest more, grow. Like, they had, like there was communities that had ambulances, they had doctors, banks, all this stuff was Black owned. So is that an idea of reactionary politics? If I'm just like, let's go back to segregation, because there are a lot of FBAs out there that's saying, let's just stick
Okay, because I feel like wherever the camera is, that's like, your camera right there. I feel like, you know, we're not going to preach like segregation, obviously, because we are here in the 21st century. We're still in the 21st, right? We're still in the 21st century, and like, there's certain things that need to be qualified when we make statements like this. But as I mentioned earlier, W.E.B. Du Bois, he did write an article called The Paradox of Segregation. And this was during the time where we were talking about integrating our school systems. And in that article, he did make a very good point as to why Black communities should have stayed segregated during that time, and how it could have been an agenda by the, you know, U.S. government to keep Black communities repressed. Because all in all, when we think about slavery as a whole, we have to think of it as a class system. Like, I know we sometimes have in our mindset, like, what slaves were and, like, how they existed, but they had their own way of circulating economy, trading, and everything. Like, it literally was just the lowest class that you could be in the United States of America. So in the process of us becoming, you know, freedmen and then reassimilating into society, you know, because we were taken away from so many opportunities, Black people, like they always do all throughout history, they had to create opportunities for themselves. And if you think of that in the context of classism, in the context of social mobility, then you can think several years or several decades after slavery, that African Americans were doing what they could to at least climb the social ladder or climb, you know, like change classes and stuff like that. So we talk about Tulsa and the Black Wall Street that existed, and spaces and places where segregation, meaning like Black people focusing on their own communities first and their collective power, without having to worry about the powers that be. However, segregation during that time was not effective because the government, the white people that were in power, they were doing everything that they could to make sure that we were always at a disadvantage. And that's why I always preach classism over racism sometimes, because it's less about like the color of your skin and more about the class that you're in, and how they use the color of your skin and your class to keep us doubly repressed.
This is why she my campaign manager, because I want to go, and I'm coming out here like, we going to target the FBAs only. Because listen, Newark has 50% of the population is Black. And my strategy was, if we just focus on that voting block, then we'll be good. But we are the world, Miss. We are the world right here. She preached that unity, and I think I do agree with you, but a question I have for you is, what is an alternative to reactionary politics? And you kind of hit on this earlier when you said before thinking.
Yeah, I think every person that understands the suffering of man should be organized with a community like that you can call your own. There's power in community. That's why you have religious institutions that do so well, is because people are always looking for a sense of belonging. So when I was really in the grassroots space and really doing a lot of like activism work, meaning advocating for different causes, whether that be against police brutality or police brutality or incorrect governments, or just because, you know, just different causes, feeding the homeless and all that good grassroots activity, I was always encouraging everybody, whether you join Zion Park or not, but to come in contact with a community organization. Because one disadvantage of the Black community, we are so brilliant in so many different ways. We just do not know how to organize ourselves. We don't know how to exist within a space where we're all thinking the same way. And not to say like, oh, to take away your differences and to make you, you know, like assimilate or like be one mold. But like, we don't know what it's like to organize our community so that we keep money and dollars into our community. We don't know what it is to like actually work together and collaborate together. And that's a lot of the things that were taught to us through an agenda to make sure that we stayed repressed as long as we could. So whether, you know, you are a free thinker or not, I feel like people need to be joined in unity. So I feel like one of the alternative solutions to reactionary politics is to join a community organization that's doing the work on a daily basis. Like, it's all about incremental changes that lead up to a strong collective movement, and political education is also one thing, because you can still remain proactive because you're already making yourself aware to the sufferings of man, like reading good books and educating yourself on the plight of like Africana studies was the biggest thing that opened up my mind to like the reality of just where Black people are in the scope of the world, like globalization, just the way that we were even like genetically different than like our counterparts, white people, like, but yeah, it's always to remain proactive. Like, change cannot happen overnight, but if you continue to do the work every day and you're holding yourself accountable to a group of people that subscribe to the same ideals as you, then we can all come together and hopefully like unify and organize and have one political agenda that we can actually like raise up our lawyers and raise up our next president and politicians. Like, within different communities, they're already, and all negative connotation out of this word, they're already grooming who the next politicians are going to be. They're grooming who the next lawyers, doctors, and everything are going to be. And that's one place that African Americans, Black people, whatever you want to call yourself, FBAs, Pan-African, where we always lack is because we're not growing the next generation up to be in these places of power, and we're not endorsing them, putting money into it to actually have some type of collective change.
You should be the candidate, bro, because you can talk. Like, you know how to put them words together. I'm not as eloquent as my lovely sis right here. She put the words together in ways that I can't. But we do. Sometimes you and I, like, we mess up words.
No, for real, I stutter.
I stutter, too. And I think that's why we get along, because we both low-key neurodivergent. And I have a mission. You told me you were. Don't try to backtrack.
I am. I'm
now.
Just saying, like. Yeah.
I have a mission to show kids, especially in North, that it's okay to be yourself. Like, if you stutter, if you don't speak like the white man, like, it's okay. And I want to be a proof of that. And I want to bring my sis along with me. We both going to be representing. See, look, we both going to be representing the neurodivergent community out there. But, yeah, let's move this on.
Okay.
The next segment, I don't know if I should introduce it, but now we're going to talk about what's going on in North local politics.
Fun.
So the big issue this week was, last year, the city of North passed an ordinance. And basically what an ordinance is it's similar to like legislation made by the Senate or the Congress, but it's at the local level. So the council people are the ones that pass. Well, the council people are the ones that create and pass ordinances. And last year, they passed an ordinance that allows teenagers to vote in North Board of Education, school board elections, essentially. And there were some community activists that were saying, how are we allowing these young teens to vote and we don't even educate them on civics? And apparently, the ordinance said that civic education was supposed to be in it, but it wasn't. So they just started registering all these teens, and the activists are just saying, wait, how are you allowing these kids to vote? And they don't even understand civics. And to take it a step further, a lot of these students can't even read. Reading is not a skill that a lot of our students have in the city. So if they can't read, why are they allowed to vote?
I have a completely different take on this.
Yeah, let's hear it. Let's chat about this.
I personally believe that opening up lowering the election or whatever the age for students or young kids to participate in local politics is actually a beautiful thing. I believe it's a revolutionary thing. I can see how underneath corrupt governments, it can become a perverted thing. But I do know, for example, like, just to be real, like, I have adopted siblings. I hate to, like, call them adopted because we've had them since they were babies. But I think if my mom never stepped in, and nope, my mom is 69. My youngest sibling is 14. And then I have two 15-year-old siblings. So the reason why they came into our life was because they were literally kind of like dropped off at our church and my mom decided to adopt them. So you got to think about kids that got parents like that, that just like are either I mean, we have to be real about what's happening in Newark. Like, they're either drug addicted or their parents are working so hard they don't care about local politics. I mean, there's a lot of education that needs to happen with their parents first. And I think some of these kids were just fed up. Like, we don't want to keep leaving our life chances into people that are just not, we don't have a relationship with them. Like, or, you know, like adults. Like, we need to have more autonomy over our lives because these decisions are directly affecting us.
But if they don't understand civics, basic civics, how the government works, how they should be voting, how are you expecting them to vote for the people that can actually help them? And how do you stop it from being a situation like they say with the seniors, where they say they, because the seniors are the only people, not the only people, but the seniors are majority of the people who vote in a lot of these local elections because everyone else don't vote. So in these school board elections, there was like the voter turnout was 2%, and that's really, really low. So how do you expect these kids to vote if they don't understand civics?
Now, if this is something, I'm not sure how the process goes. If this is something that is mandated for them to do in their high schools, then I can understand how it could lead to corruption, and that point is super valid. However, if this is something that kids are doing according to their free will to go out and to vote their rights, then I wouldn't say that that's a problem, because kids that don't understand civics, they ain't gonna do it anyway. Like, it's not cool to vote. So
they
like,
gonna be giving these kids lollipops,
that,
bro.
Kids that like, actually okay, kids that actually understand civics and understand the importance to go pull a ballot in and to go vote are gonna be the ones that are actually gonna be more engaged. Like, I just feel like the encounters that I've had with kids, like working with kids, working with the youth, like if they actually care about something, they're gonna care. If they don't care, they're not gonna care.
So you don't see a world where the administration is going to try to sway the kids to vote for the candidate that they want in
Absolutely.
Office?
I do see a world where that happens. But I think that in response to that, I mean, it's up to us who are coming in as like kind of like the heroes. I don't even want to say that, but as just like a positive light and a force within this corrupt system right now is to like stand up to educate the students on civics if we can, campaign to those individuals, do what we're doing now, like using content, using regular language to actually adhere to them. I don't think that we should see this as a threat. If you like on some real, like I have a real concern for the city, I don't think you should see it as a threat. I think you should see it as an opportunity to actually reach a group of students that could otherwise be swayed, could otherwise be like perverted even, or just turned into a different way where we know that there's a lot of corruption happening. So it's just up for us to save the youth like we've been doing anyway. That's just been our thing the whole time.
And again, this is why she's my campaign manager, because I was on the opposite end of this before she introduced me to, or she basically reframed my brain and said that don't look at it like that the kids are going to get swayed or they're going to, or some corruption is going to happen. Look at it as if it's an opportunity for you to step up and for you to be the voice of the youth. So that was good because, right. And again, man, I'm going to be so real. Without Naomi, I don't think I would be the candidate that I am today, because she's helping me just challenge a lot of my thoughts, and that's good. So I feel lucky that I got my sis out here helping me with this campaign, so.
I heard that. Run that back.
It's like, no. That hurt. I can't believe I said that on camera, guys.
Run that back. Like, no. Clip that one.
So, another segment we're going to do every episode is Jamar's ideas. And I'm just going to come in here and I'm going to share an idea that I have for the city of Newark, and I'm going to get some feedback from the guests. This idea I had since when I first launched my campaign, or when I first announced that I was running, it was hijacked by Elon Musk and Donald Trump. I know. It was hijacked, but I started this first. I didn't start it first, but I was on it first. And it's this idea of zero-based budgeting. In Newark, between the Board of Education and the regular city government, there's like between $3 to $4 billion every single year in this city. The Board of Education alone gets $1.5 billion, and yet our students can't read. So you have 40,000 students, $1.5 billion our students can't read. And from the city level, you have damn near $2 billion every single year, and there's still homelessness. There's still people that are being displaced. And the idea is like, where's this money going? So zero-based budgeting is just this idea that you have to justify every single dollar that's spent. Because right now what's happening is I think these governments, these local governments, are just approving budgets year after year, and they're not measuring the effectiveness of these budgets. So zero-based budget or a zero-based budgeting allow you to look at every single dollar, and you have to justify how it's spent every single year. And if something isn't working, you change it and you allocate the money elsewhere. So I purchased NorkDoge.com without talking to my sister. She wasn't feeling it because she don't like me riding the whole Donald Trump and Elon Musk wave. But I'm also an independent.
He doesn't ride it.
Yeah, that's pause. I don't ride it. Yeah,
I don't adhere to a lot of the moral things that they're talking about.
There's an argument that since I'm an independent, that we can get ideas from everywhere. It doesn't like we're not just like Democrats. I'm not a Republican. I'm a legit independent. And my theory is that we're just going to follow the best ideas and the ideas that work for our city, because there's no way that people in Newark should be doing what other municipalities are doing out there, because we have a different constituency, different residents with different problems. So this idea of zero-based budgeting, what do you think of that? Like, do you think that's a, like, do you think that'll be effective for us here in Newark?
So I feel like a lot of the ways that the government is inefficient is because we're still stuck on operating systems that have been in place since mad long ago. The perfect example, right? I got a great example for you. The place where we work, where I work at, downtown Newark, which has now been converted into a venture capital firm that invests in like robotics, industrial independence, all that great, crazy deep tech stuff. It used to be the Newark Board of Education building. And for some reason, U.S. Postal Service still sends us mail addressed to the Newark Board of Education building.
Wasting taxpayer dollars, bro.
Even though they have not been there. And I can attest to this because my mother literally used to work at the Newark Board of Education building. Same building, same floor of the building that I work in. And you can still see that there has been, like, no changes, really, besides that. But that's a whole different tangent. So back to what you're saying about zero-based budgeting and the Department of Government Efficiency, I feel like the new age way of thinking is what I learned when I was taking project management courses and to get my certificate, is having this agile mindset that what worked in one season is not going to be able to work in another season. Like, always being able to be objective in our thought processes and not married to one idea. Because when people become too emotionally attached to their ideas, it's very hard for them to disassociate, and they take offense to what needs to be changed, when in actuality, we've gone through a pandemic, we've gone through traumatic presidencies, we've gone through, you know, like, traumatic events, we're seeing genocide happen around the world. Like, we need to really be up to date and be adaptive. So I can understand why for a certain space and time that it would take us to really tighten up the Newark budget, because we really do need to make sure that funds are being allocated into the proper places. And we have to be more transparent with what people's tax dollars are going, especially if property taxes in Newark are like at a significantly historical high since they've ever been. So I think people are going to want answers. I don't think that we need to associate this thought process with Donald Trump and Elon Musk and all the other neo-Nazis that exist in the world. But they did cook up in the process of understanding government efficiency. And I think that that's something that both the Democratic Party can actually learn. The Democratic and the independent parties should be more agile in their thought processing, looking for different iterations, and always constantly wanting to fix things and develop things, opposed to like just wanting things to stay the same.
I like that. So Trump,
but we do not subscribe to Trump.
We don't subscribe to Trump. We don't subscribe to Trump. We don't subscribe to Trump. I'm not a Trump supporter. I voted for Kamala, so I tried. But the idea is that here in this city, when something needs to get funded, what they do is they go to the homeowners and they say, we're going to raise property tax. So I don't think it's about Trump. I think it's about telling residents that we're going to, like, find the money, find all the waste in our government, and we're going to use that waste to fund some of these social programs so we don't have to keep raising taxes.
Yeah, because...
Let me cook real quick. Let me cook for 2 seconds, and I'm going to pass it to you because I really have to say this. Like, we're so caught up on Trump, Democrat, Republican, and we're not doing what makes sense. And it doesn't matter for me who the idea came from, or it doesn't matter who the idea came from. It matters if we're saving residents money. We got a budget of $4 billion every single year. We should be using that way more effective and way more efficiently. So if you put me in office, if you support me, if you vote for me, I'm going to try my best to look at every single dollar to try to see if there's ways that we don't have to raise your taxes, because that's why a lot of Norkers are leaving. A lot of Nork homeowners that have homes since the 70s, the 80s, the 90s, they are leaving because each year our government is raising the taxes. And then the middle class are the people who really get hurt, because 30% of the population in Newark are poor. So they're not like you can't tax them higher. So they go after the homeowners, the middle class. So it doesn't matter where these ideas come from. It matters that we are trying to save you money and trying to be more effective and efficient with your tax dollars.
Yeah, it all goes back to social mobility, like I was saying before. And that was one of the biggest things that Zion Park was trying to advocate for. It's just like, as the society grows, specifically in Newark, as we know, we see the gentrification in real time. How do we make sure that the citizens and the constituents are allowed to move up with the city? Like, the city should not be growing at a different pace than its citizens, because we are the ones that are funding these projects out of our tax dollars. And that's why taxes within a corrupt state can actually disencourage social mobility. Like, we should all be striving for social mobility. Like, you should want the next generation that comes up after you, especially within your family, to have more wealth and to have more money than the generation before. But if we're constantly in a system where they're not encouraging that, because we're misallocating taxpayers' dollars, or we're not doing budgeting properly, like, that dream and desire for generational wealth that's going to happen in your family is not going to exist. For example, if grandma got to sell her house because her property taxes are too high, that property that would have been inherited by you is now no longer yours and is sold back. And now grandma is living with y'all and y'all in an apartment, whereas that could have been in a different space and time. It could have been a legacy that was left. And I only speak from knowledge, because that's exactly why my mama left New Jersey. Like, she couldn't afford the property taxes for her house no more. We had a big, beautiful house. My daddy died in that house, trying to get us that house. And all of a sudden, we couldn't afford it no more. So what could have been a legacy that was left down to us, somewhere where I can say my father actually built with his hands, we lost it. Now imagine if we had more government efficiency and we understood where our tax dollars were going. Or if that tax money that we're pumping into the public school system could actually be funded through some of the community organizations like Unified Vailsburg Services Organization and all these other, like, supplemental programs that exist within the city of Newark that are being shut down due to improper budgeting or lack of funding, that actually are taking the time to spend one-on-one with our kids to help them, encourage them beyond reading, but also empowering them to understand the importance of education, because a lot of kids don't take the education seriously because they don't understand the importance of it. And they need people like you and me, or everyone else that's in this room, to, like, really be like, yo, this is where my education was able to afford me. This is why you should learn how to read and write, opposed to, like, you know, other things that are existing. So we just pumping money in the wrong directions. And I think we really need to have a clear understanding of where this money can actually be used in a more functional sense. So I do agree with that.
Mm. So when y'all see me out there on a campaign trail or giving these speeches on Instagram or TikTok, whatever, just know that this is the brains behind everything right here.
It's the testimony, because I done been through it.
So before we get to closing, do we need to clean some stuff up? I think we need to clean this idea that I identify as FBA, but I also understand, thanks to Naomi, that is bigger than FBA in that we need to be thinking more inclusively, which I do. I studied globalization studies in grad school at Dartmouth College, and that's just the study of different cultures, specifically how local governments work throughout the world. So I do have a global perspective, but I do also think that FBAs, we don't get treated fair in a society, and we never have been. So
hold on, wait. So, because I identify as Pan-African, okay? So, and we both black and we both from Newark.
Are you saying that because we have Nigerians in here?
No, I identify as Pan-African, meaning post the diaspora.
What does that mean, Pan-African?
Pan-African means basically like.
Oh, well, I think I know what it means, but I want to
like
hear
you after,
say.
Like Pan, meaning after. Africa, meaning like what happened after the diaspora, where we were taken through the slave trade and everything and like that. So I believe like that black people, although I know I have indigenous blood, I feel like the slave trade is like I'm from Africa. I'm not from the
Who built America? Pan-Africans or FBAs?
I mean, foundational black Americans is the idea that we lived on this continent before.
I asked
the
you a simple
trade.
Question. Who built it? Who
both
built America?
Both of them. Because, like, it just depends on your conceptualization. We can't go back that far. I mean, I personally don't want to believe that, like, okay, I understand it took a lot for them to navigate from the south to the north. You had to have some know-how of the land. So I can understand why people think that they're foundationally black Americans.
When did America first start letting black immigrants into this country? That's the question. That's something that we have to do more research on.
But it would be like 1665?
Bro, my point is that's something we have to do more research on, because I don't want to make nobody uncomfortable, but my name is Jamar Youngblood. Youngblood is a Cherokee name, so I'm sure the Cherokee people owned slaves at some point, and I was part of, my lineage was part of that. But there's a narrative out there that foundational black people, native black people built this country, and yet
I agree with that.
And we get like treated the worst. So when I say I'm representing that, I think I'm doing it from an identity standpoint to the youth, to let them know that it's okay to like be from the ghetto or be a descendant of slaves. Like, we gonna make that lit.
But that's the same, but Pan-Africanism also teaches the same. But what we're not saying is that, like, we were literally, like, native to this land. Like, there were people that were native to this land. I personally believe that my lineage draws. I think the origin. Well, I believe that the origin of man is from Africa.
Yeah, that's true. So, but I don't know anything about my culture past Alabama.
I don't either.
So how can I say I'm African or whatever if
which
I don't
is,
know anything?
Which is true. Like, I definitely understand. And I went through that. Even if you analyze, like, the Kendrick Lamar performance, one thing that really was like it hit me like a brick wall when I first started doing my activism work, like heavy, like on my own. Like, my mother, she was so scared. She was like, bro, like, I'm just scared that you're gonna get killed. And then I remember having an American flag on my wall in my childhood room, and that was when I looked at it and I was like, bro, like, I'm really American. Like, yo, like, I don't know nothing beyond America. So I get that realization, but I feel like it's more empowering for us to try to subscribe to an African knowledge base opposed to, like, the corruption of what happened within our trauma. Like, I feel like FBAs kind of, like, operate out of that trauma.
No, I don't operate under that trauma. I operate under innovation. I operate under resilience. Like, again, I say FBAs because when I think about my heritage, I can't go back into Africa, but I could go and think about all of the people who just were resilient, and they were strong, and they gave their lives, and they fought so I could have the opportunities that I have today. So that's what I identify with, and when I wake up every single day, I'm proud of that. So
I love that for you.
These are the conversations that Naomi and I have all the time, so I'm happy that we are able to have these conversations on camera. So let's get into some closing. Let's get into the closing segment. You have anything to say before I start promoting everything we have going on? Actually, let's talk about this. OurNork.com, that is something Naomi and I created together. It's a social network for Norkers only. Yes. By the time this comes out, is going to be available. You can go to the website and sign up. And the idea is for us to share all of any ideas, any problems we have in NORC.
Yes.
We have a platform to share it with each other. And I think that's going to be really helpful for our city.
Yeah, for sure. So when this episode comes out, our NORC will be launched.
Yep.
And
go sign up.
Honestly, here, okay, let's, like, even the whole, like, okay, political civic engagement, because that can be a little, I know. But at the same time, though, your Instagram algorithm, your, like, everything, you want it to be a little bit more concentrated to your local so you can feel the actual impact. So it's definitely going to be a great space to stimulate the creative economy as well as our local economy and kind of, like, tie everything back together. Our goal is to have a unified NORC, like, whether you blood, you crip, you black, you white, like anywhere from this ward to that ward, like we really want to bring us all together, because in order for NORC to really progress, it's in the hands of the people. It's no longer in the hands of our politicians. And we have to come on one accord so that we can build generational wealth, like what I was saying before. I know y'all want some money on. So go out, sign up to Our NORC, have some fun on.
Word. Also, follow us, Our NORC. O-U-R-N-E-W-A-R-K on IG.
Our
NORC, and the show. You're going to find it on ROD Studios Network on YouTube. I'm going to say it again. The show, you can find it on ROD Studios Network. And until next time.
Follow me on Instagram at I am Naomi Ruth. That's N-A-O-M-I-R-U-T-H.
Until next. Can I finish? That was good. You did a good job. Shout out to my sis, my campaign manager. She crushed it today. And again, until next time, peace. Yeah. Peace.